6.5% was it? Is that what the current odds are of the Stanley Cup?
Well, and if you look at the round by round progression, the Stanley Cup favorite is the Vancouver Canucks.
Like, what a time to be alive!
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust, this is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup we could afford under the salary cap. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com. I'm Chris at Lightforce, joined virtually, as always, by the slowly melting in the summer heat, Anna Forsythe, the Forsythe03. Welcome, Anna.
Thanks, Chris. Yeah, I think we're both types that don't do well with the heat, and It's been very topsy-turvy weather in Vancouver, going between, like, wintry January to, like, super middle of summer hot, so we don't cope.
I mean, a couple of weeks ago, we were podcasting from Locarno Beach because that was totally true. And this week, we're staying the heck away from the beach because it's too hot. But you're right. Like, the weather has been sort of up and down. I mean, that happens. I've been around these parts for a long time now. This is nothing new. What's new is the highs and the length of time as to which the heat wave shows up is much longer. But we did go through some extremes. Like in May, we had like not a heat dome, but enough conversation around the possibility of what makes it a heat dome, meaning it was close enough.
Yeah.
Then we went down to a lull, and then we had this nice sort of what we were talking about before we hit record, the warm spring, which is really nice.
Yeah, it was lovely. And then it became winter.
Yeah, January. Had some solid January weather. Not as bad of a January as we did last year. Last year's January was...
Went on longer, yeah.
Yeah, but now, yeah, it's warmed up again, so is what it is.
I know, classic Vancouverites complaining about the weather.
Yeah. Speaking of the heat, NHL awards happened, moments ago.
So hot off the press.
Yeah, and then we have the entry draft happening in just a couple of days. And then free agent frenzy this upcoming weekend. So if you're an NHL fan, it's hot, hot, hot. Did I there?
Yeah, I do. I like it.
But in the last 2 weeks, the Vancouver Canucks decided they needed to ensure we had some content to talk about. So we'll get into OEL and how he's OUT. Whether or not we might see Ethan Bear back in a Canucks uniform and when that might happen, as to who they might be interested in. And hey, NHL, you really know how to stick your foot in your mouth. And when you have one in there, you always think you got room for another. So we're going to get into a decision that the league made just a few days back regarding theme nights. But before we do, let's get into Rewind. So Oliver Ekman-Larsson is a Canuck no more. He was at one point the player that everyone and their dog thought would be bought out. I mean, I think that was almost believed to be what would occur when the Vancouver Canucks, you know, reach that point of needing to free up some cap space. Yet when the first window opened up to allow for that to happen, it didn't. And that reinforced a lot of the messaging that we were getting out of the front office, specifically Patrick Alvin saying, I don't see the value in buying out a player. It's not a good way to spend money. We think we have the flexibility to make things work. Apparently they didn't.
Yeah. I mean, just in the last episode, we were talking about, you know, like, who's going to play the big defensive minutes for Vancouver, because, like it or not, like, the players like OEL and Talon Myers play a lot of minutes. They eat up a chunk of minutes there. Obviously, Quinn Hughes is the workhorse of all workhorses, but, yeah, it was past the point where I thought something was going to happen. It's not like the most shocking thing in the world, but yeah, I thought they were done and they were trying to figure a new way around it.
Well, I think the new way around it that the Vancouver Canucks thought they had available to them was a trade with an amenable partner who didn't want to take them to the cleaners over the fact that they were the only team in the red.
Yeah. I mean, like, there's definitely no appetite for OEL. Like, anywhere on the trade market, like perhaps like
what? I don't necessarily think the Canucks were trying to trade OEL.
No.
I think they were trying to find flexibility elsewhere, but there weren't right. there wasn't a team out there that was willing to go in and accept that we're going to take a contract from you.
Right. And I think Connor Garland was maybe one of those players. Brock Besser, maybe a while ago, was one of those players too that might be on his way out just if there was the price. But Canucks didn't like the price of the trades that they were being offered for those players, clearly. Well, that's not to say Connor Garland won't get traded, but certainly not right now.
You know, from what I understand to have taken place was that it's not that, to your point, that teams weren't interested in a Connor Garland or a Brock Besser. It was that the price that they were willing to pay was significantly discounted, knowing that the Vancouver Canucks were in a position of absolutely no negotiating strength. You know, one might argue, well, the Canucks can choose not to accept the deal, and they chose not to. Yeah, but the other teams are okay with that, knowing that, like, Vancouver will have to do something. Now, what did they elect to do? Well, they bought out OEL. And in doing so, they went from, I think it was like a million-ish over the cap to now having like about $6.5 million in cap space. That was how significant the buyout was in this particular or this upcoming season. The dead cap space is like $150,000 or something like that. Yeah. However,
that is just next year.
You know, the season after, that's 2.5-ish. It's like that for, I think, a couple of years. And then for, you know, now until, you know, time immortal, it's like $4 million or something like that. Like it.
So it just to.
Goes like, up and then comes down again or something
like that. Quickly go over the real numbers here. Next year, it's, 146,667. Mm-hmm. Year after. 2,346,667. Okay. The next 2 years, it is 4,766,667. And then it goes back to 2,126. So, like, it's just those years 3 and 4 look so brutal right now. Like, and I actually, like, haven't gone through the entire team, but, like, what is it, 25, 26, and 26, 27? Like, Quinn Hughes, like, his last year of his deal is 26-27. Like, all our contracts, like, are running out in 25-26. Those are the second most, apart from JT Miller. Who, again, we know doesn't even fit on the page.
Yeah. The Canucks are banking on a cap going up quite a bit. Like, that's really what I think a lot of this has to do. I mean, they needed to do something. Trade wasn't it. Like, they were in a position where I think their only avenue at this point is either to accept that they're going to go and give up the farm to simply keep the lights on in the barn, or alternatively do what they did here with a buyout. But if the cap goes up, then that dead cap space doesn't become problematic. You still have some room-ish because – how are you going to afford the players that you might want to keep under contract? I mean,
like, yes, I think the cap will go up, and I think a lot of people expected it to go up more. Obviously, didn't because NHL loves to limit itself. But, like, is it going to go up enough for the Canucks to be out of trouble? Yeah, probably. But, like, is it going to go up enough for them to actually be able to do what they want to do? No, definitely not. Like, that's a huge chunk of change. But at the same time, like, if you're going to buy him out, you've got to do it, like, now. Like, we criticized the sunk cost fallacy, right, last episode. So they weren't waiting around any longer. And, like, I'm pleased at least that they didn't decide to do this, you know, next year.
Yeah. The fact remains, though, the Vancouver Canucks are down a defenseman.
Yep.
They will need to fill that hole they have now, you know, presented themselves in their lineup. They have some room to work with, but they also only have, I'm going to say, like 17 contracts on the books right now. Roster size, 17 to 23. So they'll need to go and fill that up. They can run a little bit shorter than the 23. But the Canucks are in a weird spot. They need to go in and bring in some players while at the same time, looking at who ended the season on, LTIR and injured reserve and how they might factor in to the lineup. So, you know, there's a lot of different dominoes that still remain standing that may have to fall for us to get a better picture of what the Vancouver Canucks will look like going into the 22-23 season or 23-24 season. Sorry.
Yeah. And looking at that blue line, obviously we've got Ethan Bear.
May or may not be back.
May or may not be back. Like, him having shoulder surgery while necessary is a complicating factor, and I can understand that, but at the same time, like, again, like, we need some D-man. I believe Carl Burrows is just, his agent has just started talking to Canucks management, which, like, I get it, he's not a priority, but I do think he's a cheap and easy option for a, like, real hot player on... Yeah.
Well, I think it's safe to say the Vancouver Canucks would like Ethan Bear back, but they don't want to pay Ethan Bear the money he probably would have been able to get himself, albeit restricted.
If he's like, not going to be Ethan Bear.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you got, the Canucks are in a position where I believe they have to qualify to retain his rights. Exactly. They may, but then Ethan Bear is also arbitration eligible. So the Vancouver Canucks would have to go into this saying, if we go in and we, you know, qualify at the bare bones minimum to retain rights, and the said player goes and takes us to arbitration, mm-hmm. are we willing to risk the arbitration could take us to a spot where the player will get more than we're willing to pay? Like, it is this weird sort of, you know, chess match that I think has to play out. And based on the scuttlebutt that we're seeing from, you know, those much closer to the scene than you and I ever will be. Mm-hmm. The Vancouver Canucks aren't maybe as keen to you know, do a deal.
And I think that prior to this injury, I think that it was pretty straightforward. So it'll be a shame if he goes. I liked him. Obviously there's some weaknesses to his game, taking the puck out of the zone being the major one.
That's what you get Quinn for.
Exactly, yeah. Quinn is going to be, like, the only player that might be able to do that.
If you've ever watched, like, box lacrosse, I mean, essentially all forms of lacrosse, but box lacrosse specifically,
which Quinn is the Hughes one will be inside.
Yeah, so, like, if you see the Vancouver Warriors, that's box. Yeah. So Quinn Hughes will be a defensive specialist who, the moment he gets the puck up out of the zone, he goes off the ice, which isn't actually going to make a lot of sense, because then he runs down to the other side of the bench, jumps on the offensive side too, because, you know, your defensive ringleader. But that's essentially what would have to happen, is he's situational. He's coming off the bench just to get the puck up.
Like when Bo would, like, just take the face off and then
exactly that's the ice. Exactly. Bo was out every face off. Quinn will be out in every defensive zone. Once the puck's out, he goes off, maybe gets a rest, maybe doesn't. Depends on the situation.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens there, but I don't think it's as straightforward as it would have been.
Yeah, I just want to make it very clear. If there's anyone out there taking you or I seriously in these last 30 seconds, please don't. Yeah.
Please do not. Like, we are not the insiders. Maybe we're insiders with, like, 13 R's.
Yeah, if that. So, friend of the show, Jay, he had been, you know, blowing the Lucic to Vancouver horn as loud as he possibly could. Now, for those that don't know, Jay actually played hockey with Luch growing up. So there is sort of a more familiar connection there than any one of us might have. Word on the street is that Lucic is going to explore free agency and Vancouver isn't in the mix. How interested Vancouver may have been, who knows? Yeah. There may have been interest. There may have been a tire kicked. But then I also wonder, is Luch possibly looking for some money that doesn't match what Vancouver's got to give to?
Almost certainly. Like, he's looking for a last pay deal, like a big payday for the, like, last possible time. I mean, who knows? Maybe he'll have a rebound and, like, he'll be the hot free agent next year. But, like, he's looking for, like, his last big buck. And Canucks aren't really in a position to do that, and nor should they be, like, chasing that, to be honest. Like, I have my own personal reservations about Milan Lucic, and I've expressed them in Discord, and a lot of Canucks fans have expressed them online, and I think, like, take those with a pinch of salt, but, like, an aging guy, like, on the downturn, like, who needs to be overpaid on his next contract. Like, Canucks shouldn't be the ones doing that.
Yeah. A name, though, that has come up is the likes of Ian Cole. Now, Ian Cole fits a small problem that the Vancouver Canucks have more recently introduced to themselves, albeit on the blue line. And he's not that expensive, all things considered. Presuming his contract would be similar to what we've seen from him the last couple of years, like you look at his last 2 years of production, that's been somewhat consistent. I am burned by the number of times the Vancouver Canucks have gone into the market and overpaid for a player. So if he can get himself a deal elsewhere and sign big money, great. I just don't want that to be in Vancouver. I think if Vancouver were to go and make a play for him, they would be looking at, like, his last season in Tampa, he was at $3 million. Prior to that, he was 2.9 Carolina. So, like, and these were 1 year deals. So it's not as if he's gone and had a phenomenal season where you're like, oh yeah, here's your big money raise. I feel he's probably like three seems reasonable.
Yeah. I will say, like, there are a few alarm bells that ring with me with Ian Cole. The number one primary one being him being accused of sexual assault and then suspended by the Lightning.
I must admit, I did not know that.
Yeah, I think that's obviously that was pretty recent in the last year or so. So
yeah, then that's a player I wouldn't really want on the team.
So yeah, that's the number one big red flag for me. But obviously, the age isn't great. $3 million isn't a lot, but it's a lot for someone that's about to turn 35 and, like, isn't necessarily accelerating in any production.
Well, so, I mean, I feel that, like, if you sign for, like, a 1 year at three, I think, like, the contract for what you're getting is a reasonable number within the sense of a Jag blue liner. And the Vancouver Canucks are in a position where they need a reliable blue liner.
Yeah.
Knowing what you've just shared with me, though,
yeah, I'm that's not in. Yeah.
Like, that's, for me, it's, and like, that's a non-starter as a fan.
You're right. I would agree with that. I would say, like, also, I mean, does he take a, like, 1 year deal? I'm guessing he's looking for more. I mean, he'll take what he can get.
He's, the last two seasons, he's had 1 year deals. Like, he might look for something longer, but, you know, let's be realistic.
But he took a 1 year deal with Tampa. Deals. Yeah, with Tampa, though.
Well, and a 1 year deal with Carolina.
Yeah, okay. But yes, I guess we're kind of saying it's a moot point because we're not really interested in having someone like that in our culture. And I do think, like, we're not lawyers, we're not gonna litigate this, but, like, we don't have to, like, you know, it isn't until proven guilty, it's a legal standard, not a, you know, not our standard. And it's like, literally, if women use that standard, then it would be very unsafe for them. So
it's interesting that often the people who will go in and drop the, you know, the legal standard as somehow being applicable to life, forget the number of times that they've likely done something that in the public standard doesn't pass muster and would never in a million years try to claim the, well, I'm innocent until such time as I'm proven guilty.
Yeah.
Right.
There's lots of things that aren't illegal.
Doesn't make them okay.
And there's lots of things that are, difficult to prove. So, yeah. He's not the kind of player I'm really interested in seeing. I mean, he does have a connection with Patrick Ovechkin, so I'm hoping.
Well, and Jim Rutherford coming out of Pittsburgh, right?
Right.
So, beyond that, the Vancouver Canucks, I think they've been tied to a good number of names, most of which have history with Alvin and Rutherford,
mm-hmm.
which, I mean, I would love a situation where the history between GM, president, and player doesn't require them to move from team to team to team together. Like, I'm not against exploring those opportunities, but I feel the familiar relationship gets taken advantage of, at least for Vancouver.
Yeah.
Maybe it happens elsewhere too. I'm just not as in tune with what happens elsewhere. I would much prefer the team go in and explore, you know, I don't want to say like non-traditional spaces, but like bring in, you know, I use Vegas as an example with how they were marketing their Stanley Cup win just on the NHL awards. They were the misfits, the, you know, the players that no one wants. I'm not suggesting that's where Vancouver explore, but there are ways to go and put together teams using different pieces that in one equation add it to something better. Like I look at what's going on in Seattle and would love to see Vancouver take notes of what Seattle is doing and maybe somehow find a way. Like they're not going to be able to do it. There's many factors that Vancouver has, unfortunately, in front of them that Seattle does not. But Vancouver could be smarter as to who they're going to piece together.
That's what we're looking for, smarter.
So. Oh man. I mean, we say all this and like the episode will go live and, you know, the Vancouver Canucks will have, you know, made some crazy trade that ties up what a little cap room they have and given up all their picks. And
that's the thing. It's like, we just don't trust them with any cap space. Gosh. Yeah.
That's the scariest thing about, cap space in Vancouver.
It's like we want it, we're chasing that, but we're also scared.
The moment we have it, it's like, oh, that new fancy, you know, car that's outside, gotta get that one. I'm gonna go make an offer and I'm gonna give them whatever they need because the car is phenomenal. Don't worry about the rust on the bumper, we'll polish that out. Did you watch any of the NHL awards?
I did not. I caught a like few clips from the red carpet, which is honestly like the best part anyway. Like seeing some players actually wear cool stuff for once is kind of nice to see. David Pastrnak turned it up, looked really good. But yeah, I don't know. Overall, were there any shocks for you apart from Connor McDavid getting a fifth place?
Well, okay, I didn't. So I heard that. I didn't look at all the, you know, the voting tallies themselves. There are always going to be those out there that put names down that make absolutely no sense. Like someone had commented how, you know, Tocchet didn't get a vote for Jack Adams. It's like, why should he? And then someone's like, well, everyone going on how wonderful Bruce is, but look, Bruce didn't get any votes. It's like, why would Bruce get a vote?
Yeah.
Like, I don't even think Bruce would vote for himself, right? Like,
yeah. Like, I think being in charge of one team for the whole season, like, should be.
That's the prerequisite.
Yeah, the low bar to clear. I mean, Jim Montgomery winning the Jack Adams, like, very fair. I almost wanted David Pastrnak to win.
Ted Lindsay, yeah.
Yeah.
That went to Connor, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Ted Lindsay is the player's choice, right?
Yeah. I know, you can't control that. Like,
no, but
players are going to be like, oh, McDavid.
But yeah, I mean, if you didn't catch, so I watched a little bit of it. I like that the NHL is presenting their awards in a quote-unquote non-traditional NHL market, not named Vegas. And I'm not knocking Vegas in that regard. It just seems to be that's the place that teams started to gravitate towards. They really embraced the Music City feel, being in Nashville. So I really enjoyed that. They had like, you know, that sort of country theme. But I appreciate that the NHL's exploring in that space. As far as winners, I mean, Patrice Bergeron got the Selke. I kind of believe when you and I chatted about it, that's who we thought would get it.
I mean, it's the Patrice Bergeron Award.
Yeah. Hart was Connor.
Obviously.
No doubt, even though he was very shocked to have won it. Calder was Matty
Beniers.
That
would require him to express emotion, but yes.
Well, apparently he did. Apparently he was caught smiling on the stage. Matty Beniers won Calder. I think, again, this was, you know, pretty much in the bag. Lady Bing went to Anze Kopitar. This was Lady Bing's a difficult award to go and say this is the person who gets it.
Yeah, I mean,
Jack Hughes came in third, though.
I thought he came in second.
Oh, did he come in second? Okay, maybe he came in second. I knew he was up on there, the quote-unquote podium.
Again, like, yeah. Requiring these people to display personality traits. Speaking of Connor having no personality, don't you just love that they invented an award for Connor Bedard? So not even Connor McDavid got, like, a fake award for his many years of dominance prior to getting drafted, but Connor Bedard did. They made up an award for a player that has yet to be drafted into the NHL.
I did not catch that bit, nor did I see that, but that is...
Yeah.
Like, how much pressure are you putting on this kid? Like, he comes across to me as being placed in an impossible situation, no matter how good he is. Like, the expectations are going to be through the roof. This is a young kid that, while dominant, is going to go and see a much different game. And to be putting up on such high a pedestal in a spot where people are going to look at every opportunity to tear him down.
Yeah, it's a huge amount of pressure. But I just, like, I do wonder what made them do it. It does make me think that, like, Connor McDavid, they just... Maybe they're just, like, finally tuning in to marketing superstars just in a way that could be quite damaging to this young player, but we'll see.
Yeah. I don't know. Was there anything else that really stuck out?
No, I don't think so. Like, Vezina went to Ullmark. Erik Karlsson, like, got the Norris, which is kind of understandable. I think it, like... Yeah, it's just, like, the team he was playing for, he obviously let in, like, he didn't necessarily do the best job at stemming the flow, but also he was playing for the Sharks, so is that his fault?
So, I'm looking at the votes now. Quinn Hughes got a first-place vote.
Yeah, good for him. He deserves a few.
Who do you think? It had to be someone from Vancouver, right?
I mean, surely. No one else is awake.
Like, I just the fact that, because, you know, what stands out to me is when, like, someone at the top gets, you know, the fifth place. So in regards to, you know, Connor McDavid getting a fifth place, or as you go down the list, when, you know, there's a first place vote for someone who's not in, like, the top five or so, or some, there are some years where it's, you can sort of see it, there's a trade off. And that feels like a more closer, you know, amalgamation. But yeah, like Hart Trophy, Connor McDavid got all but one.
Yeah.
Of the first place votes. Did the person who voted first overall for David Pastrnak, that's who it is. The first for David Pastrnak hated the fact that he knew McDavid was going to get it. So he gave McDavid the five.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, I mean, I guess that's not a guarantee. It could have been someone else, but no, it couldn't. Because whomever that one was would not have cast a first place. Yeah. So that's whoever voted for David Pastrnak. They were bitter.
Which, yeah, honestly, fair. Like, we've debated this several times. The Hart Trophy is just, like, the dumbest definition. Because it's just, like, lining it up to be a good player for a bad team. And, yeah, how do you escape Connor McDavid? You can't.
Man, JT Miller got a vote for the Selkie.
Yeah, I know. I saw that, dude. That's so funny.
You can totally spell Selkie without Miller.
Yeah, anywho. So overall, not that surprising. Just a couple of interesting tidbits.
Yeah. I didn't actually get to see the quote-unquote celebrities that may have been involved.
Think a few countries as stars, which is cool. Like, that's what you want to do, right?
Yeah. I just know that, you know, the NHL is usually big at trying to bring out some of the B-listers and what have you who are into it. But as we saw with the ownership of the Ottawa Senators, celebrities apparently came with absolutely no credit in the bank because a bunch of them got cut out of the mix in the early going. Anywho, we'll take ourselves a short break here before we dive into half full, half empty.
take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on that.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? That because he was mad.
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He didn't play. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And, yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
So when you're listening to this episode, you are, what, 24 hours away from the NHL entry draft-ish? Because it really depends on when I actually publish this show. Sometimes it's early, sometimes it's late. You never know. Sometimes I forget to tweet about it. I do that too.
Yeah, obviously, like, because of arena availability and whatnot, the NHL draft is starting on a Wednesday.
Well, I mean, it has, I think, more to do with the calendar. Or you're right, arena availability in some regard, but also the calendar. Like, it can't happen July 1. It has to happen before. And the way the NHL season ended, there was a tighter turnaround required of it.
Yeah, but well, which was in turn affected by arena availability during the finals.
Small.
It turns out I was right, sort of.
Small little detail. I like how it gets under. I mean, it's just the first round. Gets underway 4 p.m. Pacific. The Vancouver Canucks are where they are.
Yes, they are where they have always been.
You know, Vancouver should have gone after Taylor Hall, because now that I know that Taylor Hall's being traded to the Chicago Blackhawks, that explains why they won the lottery. I mean, if the Canucks were smart, they would have gone for Hall. They would have made a deal. Even just for his rights. Like, throw a third-round draft pick for his rights.
Yeah. That was an interesting trade today, I guess. But yeah, everyone's making the Hill Hall and first rounders joke. I mean, if Chicago don't in some way succeed this year, like, that's a big whiff.
Well, they, again,
like, they're not trying to succeed.
The players to which they're going to be drafting has been placed on a pedestal, and like, I just, there's a lot more going into that. But, you know, Vancouver is 11th. There has been talk of a couple teams behind them wanting to move up. Nashville being the more recent one, who's making it widely known they'd like to find themselves moved. So I'm going to ask you again. I asked you this question 2 weeks ago, but 2 weeks of time have passed. What type of deal would it require the Vancouver Canucks to have on the table to accept an 11 pick going elsewhere for something later in the draft?
I mean, obviously, it's got to be dependent on how the draft is going, because I do think between...
So, like, it's not a deal you make before, it's a deal you make in the moment.
It has to be on the floor, for sure, because I think the... Like, from 5 onwards to about, like, 15, like, no one's really sure what's going to happen. I've read a couple different draft lists. Maybe there's more consensus than last year. But then even the consensus they thought they had last year, they didn't. Anyway, I would say, like, you've got to see where your guys are going. Like, Canucks have their eyes on a couple guys and see if they're sticking around. Because I do think it has to be quite a sizable offer for Canucks to move down. Like, not that the 11th pick is, like, the super special pick. It's more just, like, it's going to fall off after, like, 15 and... Canucks really need some, like, A-caliber prospects, because their prospect pool is very shallow right now. Mm-hmm.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, and I'm going to take, you know, a lot of what you're saying and extrapolate from the movie Draft Day, which, if our listeners haven't seen, is a fabulous movie about the NFL draft. It's absolutely completely crazy, but just overlook the, you know, little plot holes that might exist and whatnot, and just embrace it for what it is. Spoiler alert, plug your ears if you've not seen it and you don't want to hear it. It's as if, you know, when Cleveland has an opportunity to draft the consensus number one pick in Bo Callahan, a stud quarterback, and elects not to, which then sets off chaos when other teams are like, what does Cleveland know that we don't, who also continue not to take said quarterback. And eventually Cleveland goes and pulls a hell of a deal out of the hat and blackmails Seattle. So, I mean, that's what you're telling me.
Sure.
What I'm hearing is Connor Bedard, not that good, future Vancouver Canuck. Got it.
Yeah, I just think, Canucks really need to make their pick count this year. Like, they've given away first-round picks. They've whiffed on a couple as well, especially if, one player named Ollie Ulevi, maybe. And they just haven't picked high enough due to some mushy middles finishing. So, 11th, they could possibly get a really decent prospect. I'm not saying don't do it. If Nashville hand you a really good deal, then it's worth considering. But I think it would have to include a decent prospect, existing prospect of Nashville's or whoever.
So next question then, BPA or best player on your list that fits a role or position or whatever it happens to be?
That's the thing. I think that's just never a question. That's never a straightforward question. Your best player available might not be, the other people's best player available. Boston were apparently playing some 4D chess with their crazy picks from a few years ago when they had picks, 11 to 14, whatever they did. I do think you should be weighing defense and center's a bit higher, but the first 20 players that draft is chock full of centers, so I think I really don't think it will end up being important what position is available. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I will admit in the past I was okay, you take the best blessed. Yes, you take a player who's been blessed. That might help.
Hashtag blessed.
Yeah, the best player available based on your need. That's sort of how I always looked at it. But now I'm of the thought that you take the best player available regardless of what you need. Why? One, if you don't necessarily need that player, it's possible someone else might. Two, it's a whole lot nicer to have more than what you need, because how often have we seen the Vancouver Canucks in a situation where they don't have enough of what they need and then start exploring free agency or making bad deals because they're just in a situation where they have to go and sort of stock the cupboard. I would like the Vancouver Canucks to be in a situation where that cupboard was so full and overflowing that they could actually help grow and develop players that might not work out in Vancouver or be what Vancouver needs in the moment or in the next years, but then can take that and swing a deal to get more picks, more prospects, more opportunity. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I mean, I think that's the thing. You're not picking a guy who's going to get inserted into your lineup at number 11, are you? So you could be in a very different position by the time that player comes to actually play with you and develop with you. And yeah, by that stage, you might be using them as, trade fodder. And, you've seen Canucks do it actually to fairly, I don't want to say success, but some of their recent trades, they've been able to flip prospects for stuff they need more, and prospects they're not working out with them, move on and Canucks get some better prospects in return. So,
you have to give Vancouver credit. They have also uncovered players that have become serviceable NHLers later in the draft where other teams may not have had as much success. And I feel a lot of that has to do with the Vancouver Canucks having a list of BPA. And that's where, to your earlier point, who we think BPA is and who another team might think BPA is can always be different. But as long as you have your list, you're like, that is the best player available here, the reasons why. and sort of stick to that as opposed to here's the role we need to fill.
Yeah. And yeah, there's been like some really decent, yeah, value, as you say, like Canucks have found down the draft, but like in the last, like just in the last season, they've picked up like Josh Bloom as a prospect for Riley Stillman, who was not working out whatsoever in the Bo Horvat trade. Like he did pretty decently out of that with a roster player, a very good at AHL player plus a pick. So, you know, like it's not to say like, I think that's why you pick smartly, and that's why I think you give yourself the best chance at getting a player who may help you down the line, either on your roster or as a bargaining chip by like making that higher pick count. Not their 11th super high, but it's higher than they've had recently. So,
yeah. Any names that you want to throw out there as to you would be excited to see the Vancouver Canucks get? Like for me, it's Connor Bedard, but we know that's not happening.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's hard to say, like, all the draft lists I've seen and, like, talk I've heard is quite, like, contrasting.
Well, I saw one where it was, what's his name is? Oh, I can't remember his name now. Where, like, someone had him, the Vancouver Canucks, taking him at 11, and most have him in, like, the 20s.
Right. I mean, like, that's the thing. Like, I've heard on lots of Canucks podcasts, and not just from Canucks people, but like weighing in on the Canucks possible draft choice, that like Axel Sandin Pelikka like is maybe not the best choice, but then like I'm looking at daily.
That's who it was.
Okay. Yeah. But then some people still have at 9 or 10. So like, yeah. And like other people talking about Nate Danielson, but like other people, yeah, have him quite like 18, 19, 20 sort of range. So yeah, it's very hard to say. I think like as far as I can tell, like if Dvorsky, I doubt he's going to drop that low. I've only seen him in the like 8, 9, 10 range in a couple of rankings. So I'm a bit wary of David Reinbacher. I've heard a few like maybe a few negative comments on him, but like I don't know, like Colby Barlow in the OHL, which Canucks have not been like, I would have to look at a proper draft list, but I don't think they've drafted that much out of the OHL, at least in the higher rounds, so that would be interesting to see. But yeah, if Barlow was available, like, I think Leonard's going to be gone, as will probably Zach Benson. But, like, Zach Benson's definitely a name I've heard a lot and good things about. But, yeah, if he's still available, which probably not.
Well, Sportsnet had Benson available and he goes to Arizona. Who happens to have pick number 12 right behind the Vancouver Canucks. I don't follow enough of the... Well, I don't follow the A. I don't really follow Junior all that much. I will admit, everything that I've seen, 1 through 5 seems consistent-ish. Well, yeah. 1 is 2 to 5-ish. And it trickles off. And then as you start to get deeper, it's not as if there aren't good players to be had. It's just then whomever is putting the list together has different factors that they're weighing in. Mm-hmm. And that might be, oh, hey, this player is this type of style that the Vancouver Canucks need to have. And there you get off the BPA. Now you're going for best available for need.
Yeah. And I know Simachev, like people have talked about because Simachev, because he's, I'm having a mind blank, but Daniil Klimovich's agent and why am I having a mind blank, but yeah, same guy. Obviously, like the Russian factor does, like, I don't, Dan Milstein is his name, because Manko and Klimovich's agent, who is a good wheeler dealer, let's just put it that way, But yeah, Canucks have clearly shown that they're not shying away from the Russian factor. So he's a possibility as well. Obviously, he's at D. That would be like drafting it like positional need a little bit. But at that stage, it's just whoever they like the most, because it's, as you say, there's so much disagreement.
Yeah. Oh, well. In 2 weeks' time, we'll get together and we'll be like, hey, here's who the Vancouver Canucks drafted. Presuming they hold on to the pick and don't do something crazy, which...
we're not ruling out.
No. We'll take another brief break here and... F it.
He liked to say the F word.
Oh, then get the F here then. Yeah. Okay, see ya.
He's going to have the F word on it.
I wish I could give you an explanation about it. I can't.
You out of hand.
You said the F word, Dad.
You called me the F word.
So over the course of this last season, more specifically with one particular theme night in many NHL rinks, teams found themselves in a sticky situation. And that's underselling the hell of it. NHL teams ran into situations where players were electing not to wear pride jerseys on the team's pride night. They provided a variety of different reasons as to why they elected not to wear the jerseys. Some said it was for religious reasons. Others said it was for, you know, the safety of their family, quote unquote, back home. And again, all sorts of different reasons. And maybe the validity of these reasons could be accepted, save for the fact that at the end of the day, it's about inclusivity and a person who felt that they should be included more than anyone else would create this issue. So again, it is happening. Is the NHL the only place this is happening in? No. I mean, we're seeing, unfortunately, the result of a movement to become more inclusive fall into a place where those who now feel excluded because their feelings and opinions aren't inclusive as being somehow hard done by. So what did the NHL decide to do? They decided to be bold. So bold, the NHL Board of Governors have made a decision to tell their teams to no longer wear special jerseys in support of pride and other causes during pregame warm-ups starting next season. Yes, the NHL's idea to fix this issue is to simply ignore it as if it doesn't exist.
Yeah, it's incredibly disappointing, but again, like we've said, not all that surprising. NHL will continue to take the path of least resistance, but yeah, if people don't know what we're talking about, the Board of Governors, the GMs voted to, yeah, do away. So to be absolutely clear, next season the teams can put out whatever special jerseys they want. They can sell and promote whatever special jerseys they want, but the players will not be wearing them for warm-up.
Yeah.
And it's just a shame, right? Like, it's just bowing to the vocal minority.
So You Can Play had actually shared that when you look at this, a rough estimate is that 95% of the players wanted to wear these jerseys and participated. You had a very small percentage. And the NHL felt that that small percentage was such a headache that the solution was to remove all theme nights altogether. Because to NHL's credit, they're like, well, if we're not going to do it for one, we're not going to do it for them all. That's not the issue. That doesn't help, though. That doesn't create a safe space. In my mind, wasn't the easier solution to simply give those players who have elected not to take part the opportunity to, quote unquote, not take part in a pregame skate?
Yeah.
Like,
or not take part in the game. I mean, that would be my solution.
Yeah. Like, again, you know, provide an opportunity. Because, I mean, Gary's point is that, well, you know, this became a distraction and, you know, it was taking away from the game and it taking away from the causes that our team so passionately want to support. You know, he's right. This was, quote unquote, taking away from it. But you believe that the solution of this is to take away it all?
Yeah. I mean, just the message it sends. We've talked about it a lot, but the NHL, purely from a market point of view, has a pretty narrow market. It doesn't appeal to... and this is not to say that these fans don't exist. Of course they do, but like, it definitely does not go out of its way to appeal to, you know, non-white fans. Like, it does not reach out on that like level of inclusion for LGBTQ2S+ fans. Does its best to alienate like, female fans, but like, it's the market base is narrowing. And by pandering to these players and these vocal minority of fans, like, you're only shooting yourself in the foot. And to me, like, it's never going to be enough for these people. Like, they won't be satisfied with the players not wearing pride jerseys, you know? They'll find
take
some
politics out of my sports.
Yeah.
Even because somehow...
before the games. And
yeah, like... What's more geopolitical than an anthem? Like, we've talked about anthems as an entirely different conversation. But, you know, for me, I'm very, if an anthem is being played, I will stand and I will sing and I will show respect to the anthem. I would rather not have to do that at a sporting event between two regional teams.
Yeah.
So it doesn't to me serve a place there. And I mean, but it yet. You know, this is my belief, but I'm not going to fault someone who were to sit down, be a protest, kneel, whatever. That is what they're able to do. And in fact, I feel like that anthem is providing them the space to do it. But in this particular, you know, situation, you have a very, I want to say vocal minority. They're loud. I don't know how vocal they are. They seem to be just obnoxious. Mm-hmm. But that minority is dictating what you as a league who wants to expand your market to do. Like you're saying, let's throw those blinders on. You know, like how many times have we heard someone describe how I did not connect until I saw someone like me involved? You know, we've talked about it on our show. Where, I mean, let's just talk in the context of, you know, LGBTQ 2+. The statistics indicate there are players who fall in that category on the ice. What have you told them?
Exactly. What do you tell the fans that just say, like, literally, I don't see anyone like me in that plays this sport. I don't know if there's a place for me even watching the sport. And by teams putting on these jerseys, by like players, their heroes, people they follow putting on these jerseys, is not just a case of like the promoting and designing and selling these jerseys would do the same thing. Like you've got to have the players engage with it. Otherwise, really, what are you doing? I mean, like we've seen players going to pride marches this past week. And I think that's really
the
powerful
type of leadership I would like to see more of, right? Like, you know, days after this announcement, the Toronto has their pride parade, and there's Brian Burke walking with an NHL pride jersey, NHL themed jersey, pride themed in that. I mean, Brian Burke is very supportive of You Can Play. And I would love to see more players simply, okay, you're not gonna let us do this, and you're gonna set rules that are on their jerseys. Well, here's what I'm gonna then amplify beyond that. I'm gonna be much more vocal about inclusivity and how hockey is for everyone. I'm just going to go and, you know, before I was supportive. Now I'm going to make up for that deficit and more. Like that's what I would love to see more of from players within the league, right? It's that significant cultural shift. Force the league not to necessarily be embarrassed, but force them to come to where you are. Cause I don't necessarily believe embarrassment because unfortunately old boys club will then go the opposite direction. But you show them that there's money to be had there. There's a market to be had there. You make the business case almost.
Yeah. Anyhow. And can I just say, like, I was trying to remember who I'd seen recently on Twitter, like, going to Pride Parades, because I was pretty sure it was a Nashville player, but now I'm, like, can't 100% remember. if I'm like a gay teenager looking this up, trying to find out, at I Google NHL players pride parade, and almost every article is about like players refusing to wear jerseys on Pride night. So like it doesn't even cut through like the actual good news stories. So
like I just it is a shame. Like I hate how our geopolitical situation is such that inclusivity is somehow considered a problem.
Yeah.
Right. And I mean, it is in a broader sense, bigger than what we're seeing with the NHL, but how often have you and I talked about the NHL just having opportunities to evolve, to become better? And the response is head in the dirt, nothing to see here. Let the news cycle move on to something else. And then we keep doing what we're doing.
Yeah.
And it again, in the context of Canada and the United States, the NHL, I don't know off the top of my head statistically how they're performing, but I can't imagine that they've been improving their market share. Mm-mm. And in Canada, I mean, NHL has been and probably will, not forever, but will be for quite some time to be number one. But the moment some of these more Canadian regional operations or sort of second tier leagues, like, you know, the Canadian Football League, they have their own struggles and problems, but if the Canadian Football League can figure itself out and start to compete for that share, if the Major League Soccer, you know, can figure things out. Major League Soccer, I got to give them credit. They tend to be much more progressive in that sense. You know, they can improve their product and provide and grab more. It's like, hey, and they have a perfect opportunity coming up when Messi makes the, you know, trip over to Miami.
Yeah.
You have, I mean, Major League Baseball, they're going in the same direction in NHL right now. NBA is already there, but the NBA has unfortunately got other issues. And then there's the NFL, which,
yeah,
NFL is, I mean, it's, they're almost too big to fail. And they know.
Yeah, unfortunately. I mean, we've talked about this before, but like, I know Steven Stamkos said tonight about, he was asked about the, like, issue with the jerseys, and he said, you know, it's a shame that the distraction becomes a story. I don't think it has to be that way. I think they need to write it, like, you know, media needs to be writing about the players that did wear it and not players that didn't. I mean, to me, I'm like, there's, you got to report what's happening, so I'm not going to blame the media.
It's the nature of how we consume media. I mean, this is not a matter of, oh, this media operation is fake news or anything of that sort. It is, right? It's the extraordinary piece that, oh my gosh, this person is doing something that's completely off norms. And I think, you know, Stamkos is correct. You know, to me, it is off norms. So why is that newsworthy? Let's normalize and accept inclusivity as being the message.
Yeah, totally. And I think, you know, players, management coaches need to take the responsibility there of, you know, like if a player says they don't want to wear it, then it's up to you as an organization to either like get them to comply with
the message of inclusion. Hey, great. You can warm up in the hallway today.
Or
like, you know what? Enjoy the popcorn and the press box. Take the night off. Yeah. It's all good. Like, I feel like you're right. I mean, there are ways that the room can fix this problem. But that is in a grander scheme, hockey culture, and that is problematic as could be. Oh, man. What a league. Anyhow, we are at the end of a show, as we generally get to within an hour-ish. I want to give a plug out to Buy Me a Coffee, which I do at the end of every show. Sometimes I do at the start. Just a shout out that you can support us financially by going to support.c4podcast.com. where you could quote unquote buy us a coffee on an individual basis. We consider the money going towards pints. Alternatively, you can support us on the monthly basis or commit to a full year. And that gives you sort of a discount on the monthly bit. Anyone who does support us, right now, I've got some stickers. I will send you a sticker. Couple of months of support, you're going to get a sticker in the mail. So you get something out of it. And anything else that we might think of down the road to try to add greater value to your support, we will. And it's just as it stands right now, we're not in the position where we can do that so easily, but we are definitely exploring it. There's also the C4 Book Club, which Anna, I will pass the mic to you to talk about.
Yeah. Discussion has already started in Discord about our book club book, which is Boy on Ice by John Branch. So our good friend Ian has started putting down his thoughts. If you have started this book and you have some thoughts, you don't need to be finished. We're not, as we said, sadly, this is a well-known true story, so we can't really be going into spoiler alerts. But, come join us on discord.io/C4podcast, and we'll start talking about Boy on Ice and Book Club, continuing the conversation of, NHL culture and the problems therein. This time about, injuries, concussions, and addiction. So, yeah, well worth a read if you haven't got it already. It's in the VPL library system. Come join us on Discord.
Cool. As Anna said, Discord is discord.io/C4podcast, and then you can find us online at the C4 Podcast on most social media platforms. Get it to our website, c4podcast.com, to see our back catalog and discover how broken our website is. There are reasons. The long story short is I sourced a file through a template without realizing that it didn't include the CSS. It was referenced elsewhere. Well, that reference no longer exists, so our website is currently broken. This is why I shouldn't be left to design things like websites. But the widget that has our back catalog, it works A-okay. But any final words of wisdom to all our listeners there, Anna?
That's all you need. I'm just going to close the book on our conversation earlier on the NHL once again failing. It's fans, players, anyone of LGBTQ+. And their allies. I would just say, I remember once being on a New York subway and I saw an advert for a storage unit. Don't ask me why it didn't really advertise the unit. All it said was, if you don't like gay marriage, don't get gay married. I think it's as simple as that. If you don't support the issue, you sit down and shut up and sit this one out, because we need to get on board. Inclusion is the message of the day. And the NHL is failing its fans by remembering that.
All I have to add to that, and this is just more in a general sense, be a better human than the human you think you are today. And I think if most of us, if not all of us, were to take that to heart, the world would be a much better place. But on behalf of Anna, A4SA03, myself, Chris, at Lightforce, I'm signing off this episode of C4 with... We out.